This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I'm annoyed because of the inconsistencies within the game at the moment. Frustrated because I thought it was a really good first half performance after the initial first 3 or 4 minutes, but disappointed with our mentality when the penalty was given, and they score, and I felt it affected us too much, and that's what cost us the game at the end of the day. We can all argue till the cows come home whether it was a penalty or not. Douglas shouldn't be planting a foot, but is that enough for him to go down? No, we all know that. And I'm fed up talking about penalty decisions or dubious penalty decisions against Manchester United.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com, and your host for what is a Villa podcast that tackles the twice annual problem of lifting the depression of playing Manchester United. Joining me to hopefully help me do that, Mr. Chris Budd, welcome back.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Wonderful. And Mr. Phil Shaw.
Hello.
How are you, Phil Shaw?
Fine, just the same as always.
Right, so once upon a time, we had the problem against Manchester United was last-minute goals, injury-time winners from the Manx. Didn't matter if we were 2-0 up, 1-0 up. They always won the games. Then we had this problem where we'd have to bloody draw them at their peak in the FA Cup third round every fucking year, thus quashing our chances of lifting a trophy we haven't lifted since 1957. Now there's a new I wouldn't say Achilles heel. That makes out as to be really good. And, Achilles heel is like a little weakness.
It's more like us trying to kill his heel.
Yeah, it's more like an ongoing curse. And the ongoing curse now is Manchester United always playing for penalties when they're 1-0 down against us and always duping the referee, and they got away with it again. We knew it was coming because the day before, I put out a tweet saying Villa sweepstake.
You did, yeah.
Guess which minute their token penalty, brackets, that wasn't a penalty, will be in on Sunday's game. Many entries, because everybody knew it was going to happen.
How many were there in the end? About a good few hundred, weren't there?
Yeah, and I think the actual foul took place, it was 50 minutes and 30 seconds. So somebody put 50th minute, somebody put 51st. So it's a joint winner there. But the moral of the story is we knew it was bloody coming. Anyway, we'll talk about this.
Unfortunately.
Later on in the show, as we try to feel better about the whole incident that you actually know that's coming. But and it's almost set up identically to how we've lost to them in the last couple of seasons, where we have the initiative and it's almost like it's just setting us up for the fall, isn't it? Rather than just getting beat 2-0, bing, bang, bosh, 3-0. They always give us that false sense of security first before they start performing their little dark arts on us.
Maybe it's all sort of karma from that 1957 cup final when McParlin blattered their goalkeeper into the net with the ball.
Yeah, I think we've paid for that, Phil. I think we've paid in karma for that.
Paid for that decades ago. We're due to do it to him again.
I mean, as Chris said on the Something for the Weekend podcast, the last time we beat them at Villa Park in the league, they'd only just brought in Sunday all-day drinking, hadn't they?
Unbelievable. Well,
Sunday pub hours.
Yeah, ridiculous.
I wasn't even old enough to drink.
Yeah, 95, which a year after we beat them in that cup final. I'm just throwing that cup final in as evidence that we did once beat them.
In a game that mattered.
Yeah, in a game that mattered. Anyway, coming up in the show, we'll try to perform an exorcism. So next season we'll do better. We'll also look at the recent Villa news. If you didn't listen to Something for the Weekend, there may be a couple of things from that show that we'll expand on. And then the 3 points before the United game. And then an overrated and underrated with somebody who, he's a bit peculiar, isn't he? Mr. Kieran Richardson.
Bit of a lost soul, you'd say.
Bit of a lost soul. God bless him, literally. Right, let's get into the Villa news. Mr. Prince William was at Bodymore Heath collecting, updating his selfies with the players, and also securing his ticket for Chelsea, probably. Also paid tribute to Dean Smith's departed father, didn't he?
In his
speech. He was there to open up the revamp that Bodymore Heath has had with its high-performance centre. Christian Perslow gave his rallying speech about how the training complex is now one of the finest in UK sport. The work is still ongoing. There's going to be a creation of multimedia analysts facilities, mini auditorium, individual player and coach meeting areas. That sounds a bit ominous. Is it like there's the rack, there's the thumb screw.
it all sounds a bit, I'll see you after class.
Bit of a Clockwork Orange, just hold their eyelids open and make them watch their performances back.
Mr. Barkley, this way, please, to the individual player and coach meeting area. Thank you very much. maybe this will solve some of the problems that we've been facing in 2021. But ultimately, it's one of those when you're signing players that it may sway a player that's in a rare position where two teams have offered him the same wages.
Ah, yes.
and then he's on the, whatever pros and cons are they? And since players spend most of their time, well, Villa players would spend most of their Villa time at Bodymore Heath, the better it is, the more enjoyable it is to go into work, so to speak. Yep. Meanwhile, I haven't done the maths, but it's around 60-65%. Mr. 60-65% appearance this season. Jack Grealish wins the Midlands Football Writers Association Player of the Year. I don't know if it's one of those things that's done in advance. So
how far in advance?
Exactly. So I think his profile and the brand has gone up big time, regardless if he's played the last 2 months or not. So these things always play into it. But in terms of Villa, you know, you've got to be looking at that defence and Martinez, I think.
Martinez, Konsa.
Target's up
there. Target, maybe, yeah. They're the three you'd be up there for your player of the year. Gongs, you'd have thought.
Yeah.
I mean, Jack's performances the first half of the season were brilliant, but if you over the whole season.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Daly and Atkinson court case, is it 5 years ago now?
It was 2016, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like kicked in the long grass of people's memories. But now, I think we mentioned in the previous show, the court case is up and running. PC Benjamin Monk and PC Mary Ellen Betley Smith are both on trial in Birmingham regarding the incident that obviously led to Dalian Atkinson's death. The interesting thing here, which, this is the kind of crux of the matter and I think why it happened. I mean, I don't want to run the case here on this podcast, but the two PCs were in a relationship. And you've got a position there that if it all kicks off, and let's say Dalian Atkinson pushes, you know, one of them, the other one's going to respond, let's say, in a more emotional and heightened state. Because obviously, you know, if somebody hits or pushes or insults your boyfriend or girlfriend, it's going to be harder to, let's say, toe the line in behavior.
Mm-hmm.
The crux of the matter is he was kicked in the head a couple of times while the other PC was hitting him with a baton. This is after he'd been tasered 3 times. And then the second one was 6 times longer than the normal duration of a tasering. I think it's 5 seconds, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he was tasered for 33 seconds, wasn't he, as it was reported.
Yeah. So this is him being kicked in the head and beaten with a baton after that, which it's not really self-defense at that point. It's this is acting in anger, and I think that's because of the emotional connection there. But we will see how the jury views it probably by the next time the next podcast pops up. Meanwhile, the Villa ladies managed. It's quite an incredible feat, this. This is like achieving something by doing the most minimal. The
bare minimum.
The bare minimum. They survived relegation on the last day with another 0-0 draw. How many 0-0 draws have they?
Three on the bounce?
Yeah.
Two on the bounce? No, they drew a couple of games. They've drawn their last five, is it, I think. They just feel like losses, David, because they gave away goals in the last kick of the game.
That's right, yeah. But they've drawn, I think, 3-0-0.
Yeah.
And but this one was against Arsenal. I don't know if Arsenal were playing their full-strength team. I doubt it.
Great result on the face of it, though, isn't it?
Because, yeah, it was a dead rubber game for them. They were in third place. Bristol needed to beat Brighton to have any chance. But Villa managed to stay up by just winning three games out of 22, which is quite astonishing record there. And Bristol only won two. That's ultimately why they dropped.
Yeah, they did buck the trend, though, of Villa getting relegated whenever there's a big TV deal just arrived.
Yeah. Because next season, the Women's Super League will be featuring on Sky Sports. But looking at Villa, I mean, I don't want to single out Villa for only three wins in 22 games, but Birmingham City and West Ham, the two teams above them, also only secured three wins. So your next step of your evolution is to improve more so than your Birmingham Cities and your West Ham, and then, you know, you'll secure your place, but you'll be able to jump up a few places straight away. Meanwhile, people are waiting anxiously to see if they've won in the ballot to get a ticket for one of the 10,000 tickets for the Chelsea game, for the last game of the season. Actually, it's 9,998, because I'm sure Prince William's got a couple there.
They're in the bag.
Yeah, that's why he came to visit. Meanwhile, Burnley are giving away their tickets for free, are they not?
They are, apparently. Yeah, they got, is it three and a bit thousand, but they've got a new owner who's clearly on the charm offensive. So while Tottenham are charging £60 for their game against Villa, and we're charging about £45-50 for the Chelsea game, Burnley are free.
Yeah. Those are the top level tickets, it has to be said. I think it's classed as a Category A game, and the top ticket is £50 at Villa Park. So it's one of those. There's two sides to the story, isn't it? There's the club have been without gate receipts. Not that they, you know,
don't really need them, do they?
Not that penalised by it, considering how much TV money they get nowadays. But also at the other end, there is that, you know, there is room for a nice gesture. So hopefully, if you're listening to this podcast, somebody who works at Aston Villa in the marketing department or something, to have a nice little welcome home present on the seat may go down quite well with Villa supporters, considering this long, long pandemic period of time. Just an idea. Right, it's time to just take one step out the Villaverse for a second to tackle the 3 points of the week. Point number one, Jens Lehmann, remember him? Arsenal goalkeeper, once upon a time, has been sacked from Hertha Berlin's board after sending a WhatsApp message to pundit Dennis Ogo, calling him a quota black guy. Ogo, who works for like the Sky, well, it's Sky, isn't it, in Germany, posted a screenshot of the message from Lehmann on Instagram and wrote, "Wow, you're serious. The message was probably not for me." Lehmann apologised and said he meant that as ex-German defender Ogo was very knowledgeable, he had helped increase the quota. Is that lost in translation or just casual slip? Or
could be a bit of both.
Yeah.
It's you just don't go there, do you?
No.
If you're going to make a comment like that, the hammer's going to fall. Especially if you're on the board, it's not exactly sending out a good message, is it? Point number two, You may remember this smiley little ginger fella when Aston Villa last visited Portman Road. Ed Sheeran is to put his name on the Ipswich Town kit, his hometown team. It's not actually his name, it's more his branding, isn't it?
Logos from his albums, I believe.
He likes to use symbols, and this will feature mathematical symbols and the word tour, so it's his latest tour. He always uses symbols, doesn't he, for album covers and tours and whatever.
He should just use like a pound sign since he's so rich.
But don't pull him down just because he's successful and he's worked hard in his life while you've just like sat on your ass playing PlayStation all the time.
Do you know what? I am pulling him down because I much prefer what Jake Bugg's sponsorship of Notts County. He just has Jake Bugg written on the front. None of this nonsense of giving the symbols and promoting the next album. It's just like it says it out like it is, Jake Bugg. Right across the front.
Yeah, but I think it's a bit, I'd feel a bit weird, like wearing another man's name. It's like, you know, when wearing like boxer shorts with somebody's name on it.
Like Calvin Klein.
Yeah, anybody's like Bjorn Borg or.
I think I'm wearing Calvin Klein's right now, David. Thanks for that.
Hold on, are we getting sponsored? Are we getting some free? I can't think of.
But it is kind of, you know, if you boil it down, distill it down to its essence, just walking around wearing another man's name on your bloody crotch. Bit bizarre, really, when you think about it.
I mean, Wet did a similar thing apparently in 93 with their...
I remember this.
It's a bit even weirder having Wet on the front of your shirt. And obviously Fatboy Slim famously did it with Skint Records, didn't he, on the Brighton kit?
Yeah.
Which is ironic because Brighton was Skint at the time.
It's better than having Wet in your boxers, isn't it?
Boom, boom. Yeah, I always quite like the Skint sponsorship just because of the irony you could have on there.
And then there's been sort of collabs as well. I know Prince and PSG, or the Prince sort of the family, they did a collab with PSG a couple of years ago. Iron Maiden did one with West Ham back in 2019 as well. So there's been a few musical people who've kind of done things with their teams.
I think, this is Ed Sheeran essentially putting back to obviously the football club, big part of his community, and he just wanted to show his support. I think it's a great touch. It's something that probably in today's game you could, top level is probably Championship to make it financially viable for this because, you know, Premier League, too much money. But it's quite a savvy move as well because the amount of press you get from it as well. Like here we are, football podcast, and we all know that Ed Sheeran's got a tour coming up just because of the story. So that's why they pay the wonga, because as well as seeing it on TV and on socials and promo, it makes news.
And it's probably a cheap time to get it on their shirt because they're not exactly flying, are they, at the moment?
Well, no, exactly. But that's what I was saying, that this kind of level, he wouldn't do it if Ipswich were in the Premier League. Right, point number three, former Spurs and recently Marseille manager. And Chelsea as well, André Villas-Boas, follows his suspension and contract termination by Marseille. I like this. This is quite cool. By signing up to make his World Rally Championship debut in this month's Portugal Rally, he'll be driving a Citroën C3. Is this like dirt tracky, kind of rough?
This is off-road, mate. This is like, you know, super impressive. Colin McRae territory, yeah.
Yeah. Top level as well, the WRC. Yeah.
He competed in the Dakar Rally in Peru I didn't know any of this, in 2018.
Yep. And that's serious, man. That's like proper off-roading. Yes. That's, you know, this sort of thing, if your car breaks down, you die type thing.
Yeah, in the dunes and deserts and things.
Yeah, it's really dangerous.
Because he withdrew from that because he had some kind of back injury from a crash, actually.
Yeah.
It's probably he's still recovering from that while he was at Marseille. That's why he thought playing Sanson was a good idea. Oops, sorry. You thought selling him was a great idea. He's probably surprised why he got his contract terminated. Got rid of that dead wood. What are you talking about? Oops, sorry.
Yeah, it's quite a good timing to go to Portugal, seeing as it's one of the only places you can go on holiday soon anyway.
But yeah, no, I always like it when somebody in football has got like a full-on
passion,
extra curriculum activity, but at a top level. Though I remember Ian Botham used to play football for Scunthorpe United.
Yeah, didn't Daley Thompson as well? He played for Mansfield Town, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's back in the, and I remember Andy Moles at Warwickshire, the cricketer, he used to play for Coventry City, back when players used to sort of play winter football, summer cricket.
Yeah. That was how, I mean, way back. No, I'm just saying that's how Aston Villa started. It was like cricket lads wanting something to do in the winter.
And obviously, of course, Chris Waddle was an amazing pop star.
Oh yeah, I forgot about him and him and Huddle. Yeah. Diamond lights.
great hair again.
Right, to the exorcism.
Especially important is the warning to avoid conversations with the demon. We may ask what is relevant, but anything beyond that is dangerous. He's a liar. The demon is a liar. He will like to confuse us. But he will also mix lies with the truth to attack us. The attack is psychological, Damien. And powerful.
I don't know if we're good. This is going to be successful or not. Here we are again, talking about the same kind of fucking game. This almost, it's like a template, isn't it? It's like 3D model printed. It's Villa start brightly, blah, 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 score, blah, 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 dodgy penalty. United play for the penalty and then just finish the job off. Match reaction done.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm surprised bookmakers haven't been bankrupted on it. I mean, so you can just like lay it out there and bet on it.
So going into this game, Villa were hoping to continue the bounce after a very, very improved performance against Everton, winning performance against Everton. United are suddenly, it's almost like their season has caught fire after getting through their European semi-final on Thursday night. And Villa never do well against teams who play in Europa League match before they clash with them. This was Manchester United's, was it for three games in five, or is that including?
No, that's they've got three games in five games coming up, and then that's following, obviously, the European game.
So this was the first of three games in 5 days for Manchester United. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer decided to go strong, although he left Cavani on the bench, which I would have expected anyway, just considering he's like 46 now or whatever, however old he is. Key moments. First, I mean, it looked like the blitz, Craig, at the start. Manchester United were, it seemed that the initial game plan was like, just land the knockout blow early doors and then you can coast through the rest of the game, because they really attacked us from all angles with like a swarm of players with real intent. And I think Villa did well to weather that initial storm.
We just started slowly, didn't we?
Yeah, Martinez had a couple of saves to make, but luckily enough, they were reasonably straightforward.
You were waiting for a reaction from Villa. I've got to admit, I thought this is going to be a long day for Martinez. But Villa suddenly pretty much replicated what they started to do against Everton and got a foothold in the game and became a threat and gave United something serious to think about. During that first half?
The first half, it's hard to criticise really anything in the first half, because, like you said, the way United came out and attacked down the cash side as usual, because they've done their homework, they know the Traore isn't as good at tracking back and whipping the ball in. But then as soon as Villa started to play that ball again that worked so well against Everton, to get it down, to get Watkins to chase after it, and Villa and McGinn was playing higher, so they did start to press United at the back, because Harry Maguire and Lindelof, with the ball at their feet, they're just an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah, I thought we looked pretty good in the first half, actually. I thought it's hard to say if we necessarily deserved to go in ahead, but I thought when we got the chance to, we took the goal. Brilliant. The Traore goal was a cracking strike.
And it was amazing. I mean, we talked about this in Match Club. He is like a super wild card. I think I described him as he's just got this massive spectrum of ability, but you never know what you're going to get. It's like genius one end and shambolic the other end,
and anything and who knows in between. It's just but it's a great finish. You thought, right, we're really in the game here. We've kind of soaked up a lot of pressure. Man U, I didn't think were particularly sharp in the final third, but they looked like they were they could cause us problems. And so, and then you go in ahead and you think, right, okay.
Well, that was the interesting thing, because you'd have noticed Villa, their game management from about late 30s to half time, at any opportunity they tried to break down any momentum Manchester United tried to get going, and they were playing it around the back just to kind of slow it down and just see it out. So they went into the half at 1-0, and you're pretty happy with that, because we'd shown enough threat and intent on the break. I did say at halftime in Match Club, I think its next goal wins, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take them long. I think they decided, well, let's not wait until the dying embers of the game here. Let's play the old play for the penalty trick early doors, and let's go on and make sure we win this comfortably.
They'd even started too at the end of the first half, whenever they knew that they were sort of in a game. It's like you just say it, they get the ball in and around the corners of the penalty box or in it, and they just retain possession in the penalty box, like force you to make a tackle or an effort to get the ball.
Yeah, lots of 1-2s, isn't there, around the edge of the box. They're just looking for that, just for that moment. And they can slip it into like a 50-50 situation where, you know, you can leave a dragging leg or whatever. I mean, they know the dark arts down to the ground. I mean, Smith, as you heard at the start of the podcast, it was not happy at all. And, you know, there's a reason why we had put a sweepstake up on Twitter, because it happens every game. And it's the third time that Smith has experienced it. And he's no surprise, he's pissed. I don't know, that it's almost like they're influencing the referee all the time, because Bruno Fernandes was in the referee's ear all through the first half. It's almost like he's laying the foundations.
Yeah, there was that crazy moment where they went to take a free kick after Konsa was down, and Fernandes just ran up as if he was going to knock the ball into an empty goal there. But Martinez did the right thing by just sort of removing that query by picking the ball up, because if Fernandes had put that in, I'm sure VAR would have found some way to say Villa had already taken the free kick or something like that. There was just something in it.
Too cynical, Phil. Too cynical.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
They got that penalty 7 minutes into the first half, and it was a quick 1-2, wasn't it? I mean, let's talk about the penalty first. What's your reading of it? Pogba's not stupid, is he?
Pogba's not stupid. You can kind of see what he's going to do. And you can see the play developing. That's the frustrating thing. And you can see what Luis is there. And it's one of those things where if you're in the ground, or when I'm in the ground, I'm just screaming, don't dive in. And he just leaves his leg trail, and you think, he's going to go over it. So when he goes over it, you know the penalty's going to be given. As much as it's frustrating and he's playing for it, it's...
Because the first challenge, he does well. He stands up and you think, okay, he's got him here. And then it's just hold your position. Don't fucking dive in. You don't need to at this moment in time. And... bit of naivety.
Yeah, it was naive completely. And as Smith said it himself, you know, obviously when the, you know, Fernandes doesn't seem to miss penalties ever. And
well, that's that, because he waits until the goalkeeper's lying down, and then he just taps it in the opposite corner.
And then the penalty, as Smith said, it just changed Villa mentally. You can see our confidence is still fragile. And once Man United got level, you just knew the inevitability was there. And the second came three minutes later?
It's not just the players, though, is it? Because supporters, we go, we all thought, ah, shit, here we go again.
Yeah, no, we know, unfortunately.
Yeah and see, even that influences the second goal, because Mings isn't touched tight on Greenwood because of that. I mean, he knows that if he's touched tight on him, he could go over again, so he gives him too much space, and, well, he turns him and that's it.
I mean, this is an age-old problem nowadays, and you thought that television, I mean, literally every game is screened. You would think that with replays and the technology that this would put players off, but it doesn't at all.
No, it's emboldened them to actually, if they can now justify it with any sort of touch, you know, down they go, and they'll go, oh, the television cameras will show that there was a touch there, so down I go.
Well, yeah, and this is the interesting thing, because then VAR comes in and you think, oh, good, finally, something to get rid of these cheating bastards, and it'll hopefully change the culture of the game. And then... you see how these decisions are analysed, and they slow it right down, and they're just looking for a touch. They're not analysing what kind of touch it is. They're not analysing whether that leg is there purposely and it's, you know, it's left dragging behind to invite the touch. They don't really care because it's slow motion. Oh yeah, it touched in penalty. They can do the old interpretation of the handball. There's something pure about where if it touches your hand, it's a penalty. It doesn't matter if it's intense or not.
The ball did touch Greenwood's hand and there was contact for Watkins. This is why Smith is irate. It's not necessarily the decisions per se. It's the constant fucking inconsistency of the referees. He mentioned the Raheem Sterling one the day before in the City-Chelsea game where I think Sterling has four bites at the cherry with his contact, goes down, and he still doesn't get the penalty. And then the same thing happens the next day, and Pogba gets it. So, I mean, it's just we've come to expect this with Man United, and most teams have. I mean, I sort of cynically and somewhat, you know, having a bit of a whinge, always mention that you play Man U, you start a goal down.
Well, ultimately, they are 100% playing for all of these penalties.
They are
not stupid.
Of course they are.
The only player, I mean, we'll get on to the Watkins situation later. But in terms of the Villa, the only player that plays four free kicks and applies some of the dark arts is Jack Grealish. He plays, you know, he knows when he's going to get fouled, and it's you know, it's not like you're not accusing him of diving or whatever. He is inviting the challenge. He knows that, oh, I'm surrounded by three players here. I'll get the free kick. It's easier. It's part of the game now. It's no big deal. I mean, you could criticise, Smith's alluded to, if, you know, do we criticise players now for not playing like that? Because if we were of that mindset, we'd probably get a lot more results. Like, for example, Smith said, you know, am I to tell Keenan Davis from now on, right, when you're in that position that you're in, just slow down, invite the challenge, and
throw yourself,
you know,
to the floor.
Leave a leg dangling and make sure it touches and throw yourself to the floor, because that's where we're, you know, where we're at. But there is that whole interpretation thing that I just mentioned. They just look on slow motion for a touch and they go, oh, there it is, but they don't actually take the context of that touch, although they, you know, they say with handball there is context to it. You know, Watkins, the situation, he was gone before he was touched by Henderson there. So that would have been a super soft penalty, I think. But he's not really doing anything in terms of simulation that, you know, Manchester United normally do against us.
That's the frustration. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, and I'm sure you agree, it's not necessarily that it's a penalty. Some people, you know, the diehards will say it's a stonewall penalty, there's contact. For me, it isn't a penalty, but... Yeah. Just because a player goes down, it doesn't mean it's simulation. It's not a penalty. You just, you know, you give the goal kick and go, right, play on.
If VAR overturns a penalty decision, you never see the player getting booked afterwards. It's just like swept under the carpet.
If
the referee had given the penalty instead of running at 100 mile an hour with the yellow card out before Watkins had even landed, you know, it would have been a lot simpler.
Yeah. They should have. It'd be funny if they gave the penalty for United but just booked Pogba because he knew he played for it.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, you have the Watkins rare, and obviously, you know, the Cavani third goal, it's game over at this point. I mean, Villa don't look like they're going to get an equaliser, but it just puts the gloss on it for Man U, but it's a bit harsh on Villa, frankly.
Well,
moment of quality, to be fair.
I pulled that point up in Match Club when first round of the subs, because both United and Villa made the substitute at the same time. They brought on Cavani, 2-1 up. They're bringing him on because they want to finish off this game. And, you know, they're bringing on somebody who's a bit wise. Well, you know, he's kind of world-class striker, so that goes without saying. But there's real intent on what they're trying to do with that substitution. We bring on young Ramsey, and it's like, well, the signs that gives out is, it's almost like, oh, we need some fresh legs to keep in this. Rather than, I think you said, Chris, kitchen sink it, you know, just bring on Wesley and Davis. That should be your first reaction earlier on, because we had I think they're playing the conservative game. Well, we might be able to nick something back, but there was just something about the intent of United substitute, and Villa's was more on hope. Well, if we can just contain them, we might be able to nick something and get the draw. When, you know, you're at the end of the season there, we're not exactly doing anything. You might as well kitchen sink it a bit earlier if you're trailing at home.
Especially if, you know, Smith's come out and said, oh, well, Wesley needs the minutes. I'm like, well, if you're not expected to get anything out of the game anyway, what's the worst that's going to happen against a team you maybe don't on paper expect to win? Just throw the kitchen sink at it and see. And if you end up losing 3-1, which you did anyway, it's almost like you've lost 3-1 by not going for it. And it just doesn't run for me, that.
It's a bit frustrating. And, you know, further down the line when we're in, let's say, hopefully we progress into a team that's challenging for things, and where you really need that winning mentality, where you've got to roll the dice sometimes to, you know, give it that extra 5% that might get you something from something you wouldn't normally expect. This is a bit limp and weak.
Which has basically been Villa's year, hasn't it, so far? Limp, weak, aimless. It's just, it's kind of, if 90 minutes, yet again, we say this every fucking week, but if 90 minutes could sum up our season, this game again, you know, moments of quality, stupid decision-making, silly mistakes, done. 2021 in a nutshell. Another opportunity missed when all the teams around us won as well.
So tell me now, who had the most touches, Wesley or Keenan Davis?
Oh, I'm going to go with Keenan.
14 minutes.
Keenan.
I'll go Wesley.
And how many?
Keenan in 8.
Phil?
I'll say 11.
Canel, what game were you watching, boys? Keenan Davis had the most touches with 5. Wesley had 3. So that was throwing the kitchen sink.
I mean, Davis
at them.
Did have that chance, didn't he? Where he kind of he does really well out wide, cuts inside. And you think, go on, take the shot, man. Be selfish. Act like a fucking striker. And he tries to tee at Watkins. You'd think, what are you doing there? Like you've earned the right there. You've done all the hard work. Bury it.
Was it that obvious a shot for somebody like him, who's quite in his brain, he's more there to service other people? I kind of wasn't surprised he tried to lay that one off, even though I don't think ultimately it was the right decision.
I mean, Watkins, there was a man on Watkins, close to him. I mean, Watkins barely got that shot away before it was blocked.
Summed up the frustrations, really.
You would have been surprised on his left foot if Davis had scored from there. Maybe not Traore.
No, well, who knows what Davis. He's going to do, frankly.
But it's a worrying trend, because if you look at it now, Villa have lost 8 Premier League matches at home this season. Only Sheffield United and Fulham have lost more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't read into that as having significance.
I think Everton's home form has been dreadful. Arsenal have had crap home form. I think everyone has, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not reading into that just because of the, you know, the behind closed door situation.
I read more into the manner of some of them, to be honest.
Yeah, I read into the getting beat thing, but not. It's not like, oh, we've got problems at Villa Park. You know, how are we going to address that? It's just like, put some fans in and, you know, there should be an improvement.
No, but if all grounds are equal, you don't want Sheffield United and Fulham to be the only teams worse than you.
Yeah. True.
But, you know, when people are always, I think they've gone a bit more quiet, but talking about context, when you look at the context of what's happened this second half of the season, where we are, and you factor in the context of how much money we've spent and where we were, you know, where we finished last season, and then you look at the fact that Leeds now have jumped us, and you know, Arsenal have jumped us, and you're thinking,
and Wolves have somehow caught us up as well.
Yeah, I don't think we're finishing in the top half, and as I said a couple of weeks ago, that is how you can tick the box on this season or underline it and say, yeah, it's been a season of progress, considering, you know, the money we've spent, but where we were last season, you could say top half finish, no problem. Now you're in a situation where you finish lower half, and if we go below Wolves, but also Leeds have finished above us, and the context,
it's not a good look, man.
Context there, Championship club last season. Also, you look at, compare and contrast games against Manchester City, Liverpool and Manchester United. They've also have played all those three teams in recent weeks. They haven't been beaten by any of them. They've got 5 points from those
barely
games,
conceded a goal,
while Aston Villa have got nil point. So there's another comparison.
Shows where we're at the moment, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, there's concerns. And, you know, the defence, I think, is fine. And it's all about sorting that midfield balance out. And it's not just a simple case of drafting Grealish in and he waves a magic wand and it all turns all right, because we were stuttering and spluttering while he was there. And as I explained in Match Club, it's a situation where if we had forward momentum and we were doing well and Grealish gets injured, it's like, well, you know, we've got the momentum to hopefully carry on despite him, because there'd be a belief. But the problem was we were on a downward spiral at the time, you know, failing to beat that Burnley game flipped it when we played great in the first half, but somehow found a way to lose the game, firing blanks against Brighton. And this is, you know, when Grealish was in the team, and then suddenly we're losing momentum, because this is an easy passage of fixtures, or supposedly. And then, so you lose Grealish, and then suddenly you've lost momentum, but you've also lost your best player, and it's the only way is down, really, isn't it? It's hard to address the balance when psychologically you've also lost your best player.
I'd agree. You'd look at the running, you know, you look at our running of what we've got to come, and you think we've got to get. It's probably a good thing, to be honest, having the Everton game relatively quickly after United to kind of have that attitude of, right, we need to put things right, we need to get back to the levels.
Bad news, we lost Watkins, who was the main reason we beat them last time.
Yeah. It means you're going to have to play a very different way, aren't we, now, with Keenan? Probably Keenan Davis down the middle. I mean, it will speak for itself. I don't think it will happen, but if he was to play someone like an El Ghazi down the middle, it would really make a point in terms of what he thinks about his striking options. But I think Keenan will start. But we are going to have to, you'll have to beat Everton in a different way now. But I think it's not like, compared to some of the games we've had in recent years that were huge, but in terms of this season, where I wouldn't say we've had a quote unquote big game, this is about as close to a big game as we get. This is our game in hand. This is our chance to get back into ninth position ahead of Leeds and Arsenal going into that running of those final three games. And we're going to need to win games to stay in the top half, because I think out of, four games left, you're probably going to have to win three, because I look at Leeds' fixtures and think they could easily win all of them, and Arsenal could easily win all of theirs as well.
We won't go above Arsenal if we win it.
Will we not?
No, because we're four points behind them. Right, so okay, just a matter of Leeds. And the thing is, Leeds have now dealt and got points from their hard fixtures, and now they've got a reasonable, breezy run-in.
Yeah, it's a nice run-in for them. I mean, ultimately, I think if we are to get a top 10 finish now with the games we have, you'd have to doff your cap to the team and the manager and say fair play, because with those fixtures, I just don't see it.
No, I don't
see it. I just don't see it.
And, you know, to say it again, that the Leeds comparison, 5 points from those games, from games where they even beat Manchester City with 10 men, and we had a man advantage against Manchester City and didn't beat them.
Leeds got 8, haven't they? If you factor in Tottenham, they've played four of the big six, and they've taken 8 points from it, barely conceded a goal in the process.
Also, in the comparison there, Villa are actually 1-0 up in all of those three games and failed to get any points from it.
The fact of the matter is, Leeds have got their shit together at the moment. We haven't. You know, Smith says we always finish strongly. Well, all right then, Dina, prove me wrong, but I'm not seeing it.
You know, we're not obsessed with Leeds here.
It's the nearest comparison.
It's more like, it doesn't matter what the team name is. It's a Championship team that got promoted. And
it could be anyone, to be fair.
Could be anybody who's got promoted. That's the situation. It's just to put a knife into that context thing where people say, oh, well, we only just escaped relegation last season, so this is a...
Yeah, so did West Ham.
And we spent more money than any of these teams to improve the team, breaking our transfer record, etc.
It does show, when you look at the points difference we had on Arsenal and Leeds at one point around Christmas, and when we obviously went to Elland Road and won and beat Arsenal in that period, it shows how much our form fell off a cliff this year. But let's just draw a line under Man United, because frankly, I fucking hate them.
The reality is, I mean, you can finish ninth, you could finish 14th, 13th. It doesn't really matter. The concern is performances and how we've gone from being 8, 10, 11 points above certain teams and letting them overtake us. Right, just before we go on to overrated or underrated, I just want to say thank you very much to the My Old Man Said patrons for listening to the show and also joining us, especially the ones that join us in Match Club, to brighten up our weeks. And enjoy our
group therapy
and hearty banter and hijinks. And also a special thank you to Paul Russell and Phil Howcroft for signing up to be a My Old Man Said patron. Please do consider joining them to support the show, and you will also get access to extra My Old Man Said podcast channel, plus access to Match Club. If you want to sign up as an annual member, that will save you 15%, which is 2 months free. So go to myoldmansaid.com and check out the patron option on the menu bar. Right. Underrated or overrated? Right, this week we always deliberate obviously who we're going to have, but we just thought we'd try to get one that we could finish off quickly, because we knew we were going to be ranting about that Manchester United game. So Mr. Kieran Richardson, you may remember him from, was it Lambert? I'll ask the question, why did we sign him?
Well, Lambert, being Lambert, had a complete change of ethos just seemingly overnight, and he went from young and hungry to past it, because
him and Philip Senderos and Joe Cole won it.
Sandros Cole. Don't forget Ali Sissoko as well.
Ah, yes, of course.
I think this was the period behind the scenes where Mr. Lerner, what's my transfer budget for this summer? Transfer budget? Paul? What are you talking about? And I think this was where you're kind of watching Lambert just squirm around as if he's just got a slight pulse and he's just really asking to be put out of his misery.
You almost feel sorry for him, don't you, at this point?
you almost feel sorry for him.
You can either have a transfer budget or a new contract. What do you want, Paul?
Yeah.
You choose wrong.
Gabby got a new contract, didn't he, that year?
So you were kind of thinking, normally you probably wouldn't get Richardson, especially at this time in his career. But you're thinking, well, maybe useful, you know, squad filler. This is where people cling on to false hope, really. They think, oh, Manchester United, England international, maybe it'll work. You know, maybe he surely is a certain calibre of player. I mean, for God's sake, we've been playing Bakuna at fullback. It's got to be an improvement on that.
But no.
I mean, this isn't going to take long. Villa career. I mean, my highlight, and it almost made up for pretty much everything he didn't do or did do, was when we went 2-1 up against Liverpool at Wembley in the FA Cup semi-final. He was standing on the back stick and he headed one off the line. You remember that?
I do remember that.
Oh, good.
I was having to rack my brains for Kieran Richardson positive
there
memories.
There was a little pause there and I was thinking maybe I've just made that up. Just
I remember him getting sent off. Was it against the Baggies he gets sent off?
Yeah, he got sent off in a derby game, didn't he? If anything, one of the few things I do remember of him was actually him scoring against us for Fulham. He scored a worldie, didn't he? I think it was the season before.
It's hard to give him a hard time considering he did play a big part with that clearance in beating the Scouse at Wembley, which that is our proud record, 100% record against Liverpool at Wembley. Over the entire football history. So he was in the infamous team that got relegated with, was it minus 16 points or whatever they finished on?
he was more famous for having it off with Leandro Bakuna, wasn't he? That was that famous one.
What, sexually?
I think it's an Agbonlahor story after he retired. And it was obviously when Roy Keane was at the club and they were obviously both playing a bit shit at the time, and they ended up having a punch up on the training ground and obviously got dragged into the manager's office. And after it was done, Roy Keane said, apparently, well, you both need boxing lessons for starters. No one connected there. We'll call that one a bore draw. So even Roy Keane was unimpressed by their lack of ability to even fight properly.
You could say that he was partly responsible for Richardson coming to the club because he used to manage Sunderland.
Yeah, it was their record signing when Keane bought them. It showed how good a judge of a player Keane was, wouldn't it?
Yeah, when Richardson was there.
He should have stuck to his original sort of opinion on Richardson whenever he rolled in the United's training ground at 18 with the music blaring and the riff down, and Keane told him, you home now, none of that, that's it.
Yeah, I quite like that, actually.
Yeah, because Keane didn't like young fancy Dan footballers. But you'd have thought, I mean, it's more than a coincidence that, Keane must have green-lit that. Presuming Keane was at the club when he actually
he'd have probably thought he could get a tune out of him, even if it was just for a season or a few games of a season.
Yeah, bit of a naff tune. Right, so where did he go when he left the wonderful Aston Villa? Left us for dead in the Championship for 3 seasons.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is, for just leaving us like that, he only played 6 more games of football ever for Cardiff City,
who were equally crap at that point. And then obviously I presume he was released by them. But he found it was 2007, wasn't it, he found God. He's like a born again Christian, which is kind of the interesting side of his football career, because he openly admitted to being a bit of a sort of lost soul, didn't he? He was more obsessed with sort of houses and cars and the lifestyle at Manchester United and lost his way.
Funny enough, though, this coincides with him leaving Manchester United. So so he needed to replace Alex Ferguson with somebody. and God, I think, stepped up there.
And that's not like Paul McGrath, that's the main man.
Well, Paul McGrath is the main man, so that's the second God that you may have heard of.
It was the complete opposite of the way that he played in the pitch. Some of those excuses for tackles that he made, two-footed, career-ending efforts all over the place.
No, I mean, he's their own. You know, he obviously wanted to sort his life out, didn't he? But he ended up on trial with Nigel Riococca playing for Tony Adams at Granada, which never never went anywhere.
That sounds like going straight to hell. Trying to be a born again Christian and going through the wrong door when you sign up.
And spotting Nigel Riakoka going, what are you doing here? What are you doing here, Nigel? And Tony Adams, what on earth are you doing here in your blue suit?
Why is there flames everywhere here? And Tony Adams, why have you got a trident? Anyways, so what happened to him? Where is he now?
Well, he tried to find a new club in 2019. He was desperately on Twitter trying to come out of retirement saying, I'm calling on the power of social media to retweet this in a bid to help me secure a new club. I feel fit and ready. Life isn't the same without football. I bet your bank balance isn't.
Are you sure he wasn't on MySpace? Because if he was on Twitter, he'd have probably found a club.
Yeah, because he just seems to have dropped off the grid completely.
Yeah.
But he may fall back on an art career because apparently he's quite a talented artist. And he once drew a picture with blue crayons that Sir Alex Ferguson put up in his office of like the Manchester skyline. So there's talent there somewhere.
If you search Etsy for
Kieran Richardson,
that might be where he's earning an income nowadays. Right, Kieran Richardson, underrated or overrated?
Phil.
Overrated. Like every one of those signings in that season.
Overrated, man.
My heart just fell out of myself.
I mean, we didn't exactly expect the world of him and he still managed to underperform.
Now, this is somebody who survived literally through his career on the stardust of coming through the ranks at Manchester United, which ultimately even propelled him to an England squad or two. So I think we were bamboozled by that. And, you know, but still that header off the line at Wembley, you know, every dog has his day. But yeah, overrated for me. You know, if you're getting relegated with barely any points on the board, then that just tells you that pretty much everybody in that team is overrated to be a Premier League player.
And we weren't exactly great the season before.
Slam the hammer down. That is it. Right. Thank you very much for joining us again. Please do follow the podcast on its own Twitter address. It's different from the main mom's Twitter address. It's at My Old Man Said, like the main one should be, but you know. I got that one later on in the process. Also, make sure you do follow the podcast on Apple or Spotify or Pocket Cast or Pod Addict, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. And most of all, if you want extra podcasts, and there's a few coming off the conveyor belt this week, do sign up to be a My Old Man Said patron and join us in Match Club on Thursday night. The last Match Club for an Everton game, which was last week, because we play them every week nowadays, was a decent one. So hopefully more fun on Thursday evening will ensue this week too. Right, any final words before we leave? Gents?
No, I don't want to talk about Man United anymore.
Ever again. Pity they hadn't fucked off to the Super League.
Yeah, just fuck off to the Super League and be done with you.
Right, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.